My name is Arlo Sutton, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. I'm happy to be here today in this another meeting of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and see so many smiling, bright faces staring at me and wondering just what Aru is going to say. Well, I'm going to do what I am told to do and have been for a number of 24 hours. I'm going to share with you my experience, strength, and hope by telling you a little bit about what it used to be like with me, what happened, and what it is like today. I'm sober today. The shackles of alcohol have been removed. And I stand here this early evening before you because the shackles have been removed and I'm free. I'm free of the compulsion to drink. And there was a time in my life when I hoped that there was some hope, though yet unborn. But at all indications, at that point in my life, whatever hope I hoped for, yet unborn, had died. I was an alcoholic and I didn't know it. I didn't know what made me react to taking a drink the way I reacted, knowing full well that if I hadn't taken that drink, I wouldn't do what I was doing after I had taken it. And why I couldn't refrain from taking it was a disturbing fact in my life. Why I could not refrain. Why the compulsion to drink was the most compelling force in my life, and I drank against my will. But I don't do that today. I don't drink at all. And to me, that's tremendous. That is what this fellowship is all about. And I didn't know that such a thing existed when I was out there in the jungle. What I thought at that time, all alone, not knowing what to do or how to do it. Until I too, like many before me, and certainly many after me, shall conclude that he or she has the one requirement for membership in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, a desire to stop drinking. And that's how it all began for R.O. I had gone long enough, I had consumed long enough, I had been unable to control my life long enough. It had been unmanageable long enough. I had had enough resentment long enough. I had been in the crowds of literally thousands and yet felt so all alone long enough that I didn't want to be that way anymore. And not knowing that I was going to be led to this institution and into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I simply had grown tired of being sick and tired. And on early morning of July 21st, 1975, and I shall relate to that incident in more detail later, I met that one requirement for membership in this fellowship, not knowing that those who had founded it in 1935 and had the good sense to document what it took to come back had also concluded with three pertinent ideas, one among which was that God could and would if he was sought. And all I know is that early on the morning of July 21st, 1975, after having been exposed to and consuming alcohol for 40 years, I cried out aloud in a room by myself alone, "Lord, help me. because I cannot help myself. And that's where it all began. That's where the beauty of my life began. And these few 24 hours that I've enjoyed since I cried out have really been astounding to me. I didn't know. I simply did not know that there could be so much happiness in one life. I feel as free as a bird that flies. Today, I have an inner peace that defies description. I feel just that good. Because Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have you, the members of this fellowship, to thank who keep me sober and keep reminding me that I'm an alcoholic and I can't drink successfully. I tried so long before I got here, and not knowing whether or not I'll be drunk tomorrow morning, I know that I hope I slipped all I'm going to slip. And it won't be necessary for me to go back and try it again for whatever the reason. For whatever the reason, I pray to God that I shall never return to the bottle. If out of resentment I took a drink, it didn't help. If out of jealousy I took a drink, it did not help. If out of remorse I deepened my depression by taking a drink, it didn't help. And I know that today. I know it so well that I tell people that if anyone who has experienced similar and identifying with alcohol as I have, can come up and honestly say that taking a drink would make things better, I'll go out and get drunk with you. It never got better. It never got better. It always got worse. I always came up feeling like hell and remorseful. Self-pity, deep in depression, and the only relief I could get would be to get back in that bottle. I come around, I still felt like hell, and whatever my problem was, or whatever reason I thought I took the drink for, had really intensified, and there I had a bad, big head, and I couldn't deal with it. No manner of academic attainment gave me immunity from becoming an alcoholic. No religious affiliation or identity immune me from alcoholism. No ethnic identity gave me any immunity. As a matter of fact, nothing gave me any immunity from becoming what I finally became, an alcoholic. And you know, that's the thing that prolonged the agony of my illness. And I can only tell you my story as it comes to me, and it comes to me in so many different ways at so many different times. But the agony of my illness was prolonged because I just didn't think a person with my educational background could become an alcoholic. And you see the insanity in that? I'd have been exposed to too much education. You know, I had my baccalaureate degree. I had studied at Harvard. I had been to Northwestern. I had been to the University of Georgia. I had been to the Practice and Law Institute of New York City. How in the hell could I be an alcoholic? No way. No way. Just no way. You see, my perception and my definition was of an alcoholic was everything but all of a sudden. When I got up in the morning, if I could struggle and get up and get prepared to go to my job, and finally, en route there, run across some drunk coming out of a bar early in the morning, or one hung up on the side of the street by a post, or one strung out in an alley. I thought that was the alcoholic. How wrong I was. At the same time, old R.O. was one, because he was shaking just like that. Shaking like that. I couldn't even get to my office and sign documents with my hand running all off the paper. My secretary just said, "You had a bad week, didn't you?" "Sure did. Got a case of the news." When I got here to Peachford, I was still shaking. Still shaking. Because R.O. didn't believe that he was an alcoholic. Ignorance is bliss. I didn't know what an alcoholic was until I got here and I was told. My drinking did span 40 years, but that's not significant. And I relate today that I just abused alcohol and I became an alcoholic, and it's pure and simple as that. And I struggled through those years of drinking, 20 of which I abused alcohol, and 12 or 15 of which I know I must have been an alcoholic, as I relate to incidents that took place in my life and the blackouts and all of that. And I don't question whether or not my alcoholism is a result of heredity, and that doesn't matter. I know on my maternal side, my maternal grandfather was an abstainer. He neither smoked, chewed, or drank, and he didn't permit anybody on the premises who did. My paternal grandfather, he took a nip, and so did my father. Sometimes he'd get a little tipsy. As a matter of fact, and I think this is the first time I've said this, my youngest brother, the youngest of my mother's five children, I being the oldest, died of acute alcoholism. Yet my brother who lives today doesn't drink, and two sisters who live today don't drink. My mother doesn't drink. So whether it's hereditary or not really doesn't matter. The fact is, old R.O. abused it over a long period of time, and he crossed the invisible, irretrievable line from abusive drinking into alcoholic drinking, and he became an alcoholic. But today I don't have the compulsion, simply because I met the requirements of membership in this fellowship, a desire to stop drinking. And I didn't come here because I was trying to satisfy a desire of my wife. She had tried long enough and hard enough and had prayed for me long enough. But I didn't get here because Lucille wanted me here. And I didn't get here because my mother, as much as I love her, wanted me here, because upon the death of my brother in 73, I heard my mother say to my sister, one of my sisters, and she didn't know I heard her, "I don't think I can live another year and go through what I've been through." As much as I loved her and heard her say that, don't you know, I wanted to quit drinking, but I couldn't. And I couldn't because I was an alcoholic and I didn't know it. I didn't know I had an illness that was progressive in nature, and that no matter if I stayed off of it, the minute I took a drink, it ignited my alcoholism. And I was off and running again. For surely, hearing my mother make that expression to my sister, being her oldest son, and she knew too that I was heavy into the bottle, even though she'd never seen me take a drink, I would have quit. But the compulsion to drink was the most driving force in my life, and I had to drink when I didn't want to. I was an alcoholic, and I didn't know it. I simply didn't know that I had an addiction. I thought I could pull myself up by my own bootstraps. That I had enough fortitude. That I had enough determination. That I had enough willpower. I had enough strength. I had enough faith to stop doing anything. I wanted to stop. And I could. I stopped on a number of occasions. But I could never stay quit. I could never, never stay quit. And that disturbed me. Because I couldn't. And I didn't know that those who wrote the big book and the fifth chapter and the three pertinent ideas had concluded that probably no human power could ever leave the alcoholism. That no human power could have relieved it. So that I couldn't come for Lucy or my wife. I couldn't come for my mother. I couldn't come for my boss who had admonished me about my drinking. I couldn't come for my brother who cried him in the night when I was so drunk I didn't know who I was or where I was. I couldn't come to this fellowship for anyone but R.O. Sutton. And I think that if I had come for any other reason or for any other person, I'd be drunk today. I simply got tired of being sick and tired. And I didn't know no other way out. Not even did I know that the printed idea had been written that God could and would. He was sought. I asked him, and he sent me to you. And I have been happy ever since. I have been free, as I said earlier, of the shackles of alcohol. They have been removed. And I'm a free person. My drinking started when I was about 16 years old, of course. That's a good age to start drinking at 16. And I, like others, drink for some reason. Mine was, and those of you who heard me tell my story before know that, it was because I was inhibited. I had a certain inhibition which gave me grave concern. I did not know at that age how to articulate over a reasonable period of time with the opposite sex. And you know a young man at 16 ought to be talking to the ladies by any stretch of any imagination, but I couldn't do it. I simply could not muster words beyond how are you, hello, beautiful day, sunshine, and it's inclement, think it's going to rain tomorrow, bye. And I knew that that wasn't enough because I could see the other young fellas carrying on in the way that I wanted to, and yet I couldn't. So one of my peers just simply said, why don't you get your little wine and drink it, and it'll help you. Well, I figured the things couldn't be any worse than they were, so I bought me a half a pint of Muscatel wine. I'll never forget Muscatel. And I drank every bit of that wine, and it did exactly what he said it would. It relieved my inhibitions, and I could really talk to the young lady. Woo-wee! You see, I thought I had found a friend that would go on with me the rest of my life, and all I had to do was just have a little Muscatel with me so that when I ran into the situation where it became necessary for me to talk to the opposite sex, just turn around, squeeze it, get me a swig, and I'd be all right. Little did I know that I was dealing with something that changed my personality, that made me that Mr. Hyde of the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It changed my personality. And it made me what I really wasn't. And the more I consumed of it, the more I became something other than the R.O. Sutton. And it led me on for all of those years until I came to that one conclusion. And I shall run over a few of those incidents with you. I shall never forget after I married Lucille in 1943 in the Army My father, incidentally, died. I married in May. My father died in... Married in May, had the reception in June. Father died in July. I was called to the Army in August, and I was inducted September 17, 1943. Lucy, you'll know I would take a little nip, but I wasn't an alcoholic, I don't think, at that point in my life. But I got with the boys, and when I got overseas, I really got into drinking that apple... No, not the apple cider. They had a cider over there with the really senior. And I got into that cider, you know, and I had a habit of writing Lucille three times a day, the whole while I was in the service, without exception, even when I was drunk. And I wrote her on several occasions when I was drunk, and I didn't realize I was drunk as I was. I couldn't read that letter either. She would write back and say, "You know, honey, the Germans must have been coming that night, because I couldn't make out a thing that you were writing." Well, she didn't know. She gave me an out. I said, "That's right. Them Germans did come." And it just upset me so that I just couldn't write like I normally do. As a matter of fact, that's one thing I haven't admitted to Lucille yet. I think I'll tell her tonight that it wasn't the Germans, it was that cider I was drinking. Well, I had no serious problems. I came on back after doing a tour of duty in Europe and then being redeployed to the Pacific via the Panama Canal, and came back to the States in 1946 and was discharged and went on into the reserve. Then I went into my vocation, in which I had a discipline in business administration, and went into banking. Well, you know, there's cocktails here and cocktails there, and cocktails everywhere. And everywhere a cocktail was, old R.O. was right there. What was the result? I never could turn down a drink. I thought it was the height of insult to refuse to take a drink if someone offered it to you. So if I was offered a drink before they could pour it, I had the glass. You see, result being that I abused it, and I, somewhere along the line, crossed the invisible line from that abusive drinking to alcoholic drinking. In fact, I became an alcoholic, and I didn't know it. I didn't know that I had an addiction, that I had a disease, an illness that was progressive, and that I had no control over it, that my will could not prevail, that nobody could help me except the help I could get in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I shall never forget in May of 1958. Now, you know I'm going back quite a distance. I had an occasion to speak in Baltimore, Maryland to a group at Coppin State College. And I remember getting there on the evening before the morning I was to speak, and I got all soused up. I really got, I did it in. So much so that I could hardly get up the next morning to get myself together to get to the place I was to speak. Struggling as I did make it. I remember being introduced, and I remember making a few introductory remarks, but that's all I remember, to a packed audience, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 people. I don't remember anything after that, although I've been told that I delivered a pretty good address. And I don't think that those there would have known I was as drunk as I was, except that I came to an hour and a half later, and the auditorium was empty, and I'm sitting up on the platform holding my attaché case. Nobody there. They couldn't even get me to leave when it was time to go. Now, that should have told me something, but it didn't. Because I wanted to drink. I wanted to drink, and I kept on. I was to participate in a seminar once down in Jackson, Mississippi, and I went down and I got that evening before the morning of the seminar, and I didn't make the seminar. I got drunk. And I was embarrassed, so embarrassed was I, that I rushed to the airport and asked the attendant if I might get on because I wasn't feeling well. I didn't lie about that part. That I wasn't feeling well, and I'd like to get aboard, and she permitted that, and I went to the very rear of the plane, took the last seat, and hid myself, because there were those from Atlanta also there, and they were returning on that same plane. That was embarrassing. They knew what was wrong with me. And when I got back, Lucille asked me, said, "How was the seminar?" I said, "They had a good time." Well, I had to say they because I knew nothing about that. Should have told me something about my drinking. But it didn't. Haro continued to drink and to drink and to drink and to drink and to drink until it started affecting his work. And when my boss called my attention to the fact that my drinking seemed to be interfering with my work, I got a resentment. Naturally, an alcoholic is going to get a resentment. My first statement was, "I don't drink that much." That was a big lie. I was drinking every day and a whole much. A whole heap of muches, as a matter of fact. Well, that admonishment didn't mean anything because I continued to drink, and ultimately the board had to reduce me in rank. One would think that that would be earth-shattering in one's life, and that one would try to get a hold of himself and pull himself together and do something about his drinking. Well, I didn't understand the nature of alcoholism. What I did, I went off and got drunk for 7 or 8 days. Nobody knew where I was. Came around ultimately, feeling remorseful. But there you are. The shackles of alcohol had me. The most compelling force in my life was a compulsion to drink, and I was drinking against my will. And I was powerless. I was simply powerless to do anything about it. You see, if you get up at 1 o'clock in the morning, take off your pajamas and dress as you see me here this evening, and rush to the bar before it closes at 2 o'clock just to get a drink, you've got more than a problem with alcohol. You're an alcoholic, whether you want to admit it or not. And that was O.R.O. Get there and could hardly wait for the bartender to give me that first one. And even though I promised Lucille that I was coming right back, all I wanted was to get that one drink. When I got that first drink and it trickled on down the esophagus and got on down and got to the stomach and spread, and I got that warm feeling, all the commitment that I had made to my wife went out of the window, because more often than not, she didn't see me for another 7 or 8 days. And I would come to in some place not knowing how I got there or who was with me when I came around. That's insanity. That's insanity. That is simply insanity. That should have told me something, but it didn't. That didn't tell me a thing. For our old continued to abuse alcohol. Simply because I was an alcoholic, I didn't know it. I didn't know that I had an addiction that was progressive in nature, and that no matter how long I stayed off, all I need to take that first drink. And I was off and running. Running again. The three pertinent ideas are the key to my sobriety today, because I anchor my program in them. I hang my hat on them, that I was an alcoholic and could not manage my own life. That probably no human power could have relieved my alcoholism, and that God could and would if he was all. And I have come to the conclusion that when you hear one who has a problem with booze, that I can quit whenever I want to. Be careful. He's got a serious problem. I used to tell Lucille that. She said, "Honey, well, why don't you sit here and just drink one?" I said, "I can take one drink if I want to, but I never wanted to. I never wanted to. She said, well, when will you quit, honey? I said, I can quit when I want to. But I never wanted to quit. And when I did, it was for given periods of time. And when that time was up, I sat up until midnight and with the glass already full of whatever I was drinking, ready for 1 minute after 12. That's insanity. That is pure insanity. I was among the fortunate in not losing my family, especially my wife, who stuck with me through all of my drinking. Some are not so fortunate as I. And I used to ask her after I got in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, how was it that I didn't drink her up? She said, well, I turned you over to the God of my understanding long before you admitted that you were an alcoholic. She said, you don't know it, but many Sunday mornings when you were hungover and couldn't get out of the bed, and I would turn on the TV and listen to Oral Roberts, and on many occasions he would say, touch the hand of your loved one, and I'd hold your hand and I'd pray to God to give you some relief, to deliver you. And I turned you over to him. And I kept believing that someday you were going to make it. And that's how it was for me. I had to come to that point in my life where I felt that I had been abusing alcohol long enough, and I was sick and tired and wanted some relief, not knowing what that relief would be, but wanting for me to be relieved of my situation. As I related earlier, it was on the early morning of July 21st, 1975, when a week prior to that, I had become annoyed with Lucille telling me that I ought to control my drinking, that I ought to take one drink or two drinks or three drinks and let that alone. And I decided that what I'll do, since I cannot quit, I'll check myself into a motel and I will drink myself to death. And I did check into this hotel and I commenced to drink booze consistently around the clock for 7 days. For 7 days. But on the early morning of July 21st, 1975, in the midst of a drunken stupor, I had a consciousness and I sat on the side of the bed. And my mind was just as clear then as it is this evening. And a voice spoke to me. And this is what I heard. Of all the things you have ever asked for in your life, you have never asked for help with your drinking. And as I reflected for a few moments, that was the truth. I had never asked the God of my understanding to help me with my drinking. I think it was at that moment that I decided I would take off the gloves, throw in the towel and ask for help. So I called my doctor, who knew that I had a problem with alcohol and who had tried to help me, but who was afraid to recommend a facility like this for fear that I would change doctors, and I probably would have. I got him on the phone, and how I got him, I'll never know. He had an emergency number which he had given me in case I became ill after his office hours, and I didn't have the card with me. But somehow I dialed his number and I got him. And I told him what my problem was and I wanted help. He was glad that I called and he held me on the line until he could call Peachford Hospital and make arrangements for me to come. He came back on the line and asked me to repeat what I had written and what he had told me. I did, and he was satisfied that I knew what I was supposed to do. He hung up and said, I'll see you later on this morning. I hung up and reached down beside the bed and picked up the remaining potions of a quarter scotch I'd bought and had about, I suppose, that much in it, and I drank it all, and that's all I remember. I don't remember checking out of the hotel. I don't remember getting to Peaceford, although I got here and signed in. I do remember coming to around 1:30 p.m. on the afternoon of the 21st and looking out into the beautiful court with the beautiful green grass and the flowers and all. It reminded me of a place I often went, high as a kite and came back drunk as a skunk. And that was down at Freeport, Grand Bahama Island. So I just turned to the nurse going off duty and asked her if this was Freeport, Grand Bahama Island. She said, "You call it Freeport if you want to. This is Peaceford Hospital. And this is really, my friends, where it all began for me. Here at Peaceford. And I can relate to those of you who are patients here. How annoyed sometimes you must get when you find yourself having to attend your sessions all day and go to meetings, outside meetings, and then come here on Sunday afternoon. I relate to that, but I was too afraid not to do what I was told, for it was here that I learned. I found out, I came to understand that I was an alcoholic and what alcoholism is all about. After detoxification, I went into orientation, and my counselor pulled out those questions, long list of questions, and I ran over them, and I ran to one that struck me right between the eyes, and that one was this. Among the others that identified me as an alcoholic, the one that was most forceful in my life was the one to ask, "Do you drink before going to a social function?" Well, that was me to a T. My fraternity gave a dance annually, and I had the privilege of inviting 10 additional guests, 5 couples. With me and Lucille, that was 12 people, and I always took a case of liquor. You don't need a case of liquor for 12 people, but you know, an alcoholic, you want to be sure you got plenty there. And moreover, on the evening of the dance, I would rush home and would anxiously await Lucille to get ready. She would go on in the bathroom and run a water, and I'd sit on the side of the bed with the TV turned up. I said, "Honey, how are you coming?" She said, I'm just about to step in the tub." I'd tear downstairs where I'd heed a good quart, you know, turn that rascal up and get me 3 or 4 good slugs out and run back up and sit on the side of the bed like an angel. 3 minutes later, "Honey, how you doing in there?" She said, "Well, I'm in the tub. Yeah, I think I got about 3 or 4 more minutes." And pew, right back downstairs to that bottle. But by the time I did that 3 or 4 times, by the time we got ready to go to the dinner, I didn't know what the hell was going on. "Do you drink before going to a drinking function?" Well, that told me something, and I think it was at that moment in my life that I came to the conclusion. Because before that, I resented, I really abhorred, I detested anybody referring to me as an alcoholic. I gladly admitted that I was an alcoholic and that my life had long since been unmanageable. And so it is today. I have no hang-up about admitting that I'm an alcoholic and that my life is unmanageable. In fact, I have to be reminded constantly that that's our oath. An alcoholic. I can't drink successfully. My last drunk lasted 11 months. In celebration of my retirement from the bank, rather than be kicked out, I thought I'd better retire and get my pension. And I did. And on the 17th of August of 1974, there was a party given in my honor. And they had whiskey and beer and champagne and everything else. And one person said to me, "R.O., it seems to me since this is your party, you ought to be able to take a little champagne." Well, oddly enough, you know, still there are a lot of doctors who don't know the impact of taking a drink in the life of an alcoholic. And there was one doctor there who was a friend of mine. He said, "Oh, yeah, a little champagne isn't going to hurt him." You know, an alcoholic loves to hear that, and that was my glass. That drunk lasted me when I took that sip of champagne on August the 17th, 1974, until the early morning of July 21st, 1975. One of the most embarrassing experiences of my life, as I conclude here, was the Christmas of 1974. And I always armed myself with plenty of ammunition for Christmas. I ate 3 or 4 cases of liquor at the house. But on this particular Christmas, my mother had been invited over for dinner. My sisters and my brothers and their children and some other relatives and friends were all there. Poirot took a drink about 1 minute after 12, early Christmas morning. And when he should have been seated at the dinner table on Christmas afternoon at the head of the table, since my father was dead, to be giving thanks to God for his many blessings that had come our way over the years, he was so drunk upstairs that he just didn't know whether it was Christmas or New Year's or July 4th or Thanksgiving. Well, he just didn't know. And that drunk, from that moment I took that drink on the early morning of December 25th lasted me until 3rd of January, 1975, and when I came around, Lucille simply stood over my bed and asked me if I knew how much liquor I had consumed, and I certainly didn't know. I was remorseful. I felt terrible, but my back was against the wall. She said, "You consumed, in these last 10 days, 18 full quarts of liquor." How much abuse can the human body take? I don't know. I don't know. I simply don't know. But that's insanity. Simple insanity. I drank against my will. I got to Peaford Hospital and heard what I heard. And I knew then that I was an alcoholic, and they told me that I had to be honest. And my place occasion to get honest was when I was permitted to go and keep a dental appointment that I had made prior to knowing that I was going to end up in Peaford. And when I sat in the chair in my dentist's office and he heard through Lucille that I had been hospitalized, he didn't know for what. He said, "I'm sorry to hear it," and I said, "I hope you'll be getting along all right." And my first opportunity to be honest, I said, "Dr. Russo, I'm an alcoholic. I'm out at Peachtree." That gave me so much relief. And there he sat to tell me some of his family problems with booze, and we share. Well, he had long since knew I had a problem with booze because I had an appointment to see him one morning about a year and a half before that, and I had been boozing it up for 3 or 4 days, and when I got to his office and sat in the chair and he opened my mouth, he just closed it back up. And made me another appointment. He would have got drunk there trying to fix my teeth. That's a fact. That's the truth. But that's the insanity of alcohol. Well, I attended my first meeting here at Peaford Hospital, and I took my chip. I don't remember taking that white chip. All I knew was that I wanted a life that was better than what I had experienced over all of those years that I abused alcohol. So that when that meeting ended and I went back to my room and looked in the mirror, I saw staring back at me right here in this hospital a beast, a person who had been reduced as close to becoming an animal as anyone could, and I didn't like that. And I made a decision. I reinforced my decision to do something about my drink. Well, I need not tell you that this has been a beautiful, now that you know, 5 years. For me, it has been tremendous in my life. I'm as happy as a man can be. I have an inner peace, as I said to you beforehand, that defies description. And everyone that's identified with me, that has anything at all to do with me, are happy. But I had to want to get sober on my own. I had to want to do it. All of a sudden, I couldn't do it for mama, no wife, a sister, a brother, a friend. I had to want to stop drinking for me. And when I came out of detox and was told that this was a 28-day program, I thought these folks were crazy as hell.
because I felt just as good after staying off food for 3 days as I'd ever felt. And I said, what the hell I got to sit in for 28 days? The best investment I ever made in my life, far none, no exception, the 28 days that I gave conscientiously to trying to find out why I did what I did for as long as I did, is rewarding indeed, because it brings me to where I am today. I have no bad days, and I've said that over and over again, and I don't. I may have bad moments, because you see, I said earlier about my program. I anchor my program, and I call it the right triangle of my program, the base of which is the first and third steps. I admit that I'm powerless over alcohol and that my life is unmanageable. The height of that triangle, right triangle, is the 10th and 11th step. I continue to take personal inventory. When I am wrong, I promptly admit it. And I seek through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understand Him. And I pray, and I pray, and I pray for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out. And the hypotenuse, the long line, is the 12th step and the serenity prayer. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I have tried to carry this message to the alcoholic and to practice these principles in all of my affairs. Whenever I'm disturbed, I have to remember that I took the third step, that I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, so that when I'm perplexed with the problems of life, I simply step back and repeat the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And things get better. They simply get better for me. As I close with paraphrasing a portion of a song written by James Weldon Johnson, a noted Negro poet, author and lecturer, educator. And it goes something like this. I have come over a way that with tears have been watered. I have come treading my path through the blood of the slaughtered. Out of a weary path, till now I stand at last where the bright, white, bright hope of my white star is cast. God of my weary years, God of my silent tears, Thou who has brought me thus far on my way, Thou who has by Thy might led me into the light, keep me forever in the path, I pray, lest my feet stray from the places, my God, where I met Thee, lest my heart drunk with the wine of the world, I forget Thee. Shadowed beneath Thy hand, may I forever stand true to my God, true to my fellow man. I'm an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. I can't drink successfully. I don't need to drink. I have been delivered. The shackles of alcohol have been removed. And I owe it to the God of my understanding working through you in this beautiful fellowship. I love you all.